This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharisa, the editor-in-chief over at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 146 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. As a lot of you know, the 8th edition of the Scott Fishbowl started this week, and this year we've got 900 teams competing in 12-team leagues with a really unique format, all thanks to Scott Fish. It's a super flex league where you start one quarterback, two running backs, three wide receivers, one tight end, and four flex spots, with one of those spots being a super flex one. And then on top of this, you've got standard half PPR scoring for running backs and receivers, aside from the fact that they also get a half point per first down. Tight ends get a full point per reception and first down, making them slightly more valuable than they usually are. And then quarterbacks get 6 points per touchdown pass and -4 per interception, and then another -2 for a pick six. You got it? The reason I bring this up is because a lot of you have hit me up over the last week asking me about my strategy in a league like this. So I figured I'd spend part of this mailbag episode, the intro to this mailbag episode, talking about that. As I've said a lot on previous podcasts, the first thing I do when entering a league with abnormal lineup construction and scoring is that I look at how supply and demand may be affected. In this case, you're obviously starting more than one quarterback, so the demand of that position is now doubled. But it's also important to keep in mind that you're starting three non-superflex spots too. That means there's still a greater need at running back and wide receiver than what we see in a typical league. But after doing this, I just inputted the scoring settings into historical production to see which positions seem to benefit most and least from this unique scoring. Obviously, quarterbacks saw a larger separation from one to the next given the interception and touchdown scoring, but what I did notice is that the scoring favored running backs more than wide receivers. I considered drafting a tight end like Gronk or Kelce with an early round pick, but I was drafting second overall and I figured that they wouldn't make it back to me, and they didn't make it back to me. So my overall strategy was that yes, quarterbacks are a little bit more valuable than they are in a standard super flex league just given the scoring. But the demand for running back and wide receiver is also larger, and running backs got the edge over wide receivers with the scoring. So I figured at the second overall pick, I'd go with a running back heavy strategy. And that's what I did. I got Le'Veon Bell second overall, then Davante Adams fell to me in the late second, so I ended up snagging him, hoping that Devontae Freeman would be there for me in the third. And he was. I got Devontae Freeman in the third round. And then I got Alex Collins, who I'm not necessarily totally sold on this year, at RB19 in the fourth round. And then the fifth round happened. I tweeted my team out as the draft was happening, and many saw that I drafted Kirk Cousins in the fifth round as the ninth quarterback off the board. This was not normal for the hashtag brand. So let me explain my thought process here. Did I intend to be a league owner who drafted a quarterback earlier than a lot of other owners did? Definitely not. I figured that going in, I probably devalued the quarterback position more than the other owners in my league. And if you're wondering why I devalued it more in a Superflex league, you can go back and listen to the Superflex podcast that I did a few weeks ago. But it was interesting. Up until that point, not many other owners had quarterbacks. Like I said, Cousins was the QB9. I got Cousins as the ninth quarterback off the board. And because of the way they were drafting and given my position, I had a fear that there was going to be a quarterback run. I think in a regular Superflex league, I might not have had that fear, but I did in this particular format because there is a slight uptick in quarterback value given the research I did, or at least quarterback value compared to a normal Superflex league. I should also note that I wanted Sony Michel in the fifth round, but he was drafted right before I went. I got sniped. He would have been my RB4 because hypothetically, you can start five running backs if you wanted to in this format. And actually, you could start six if you didn't want to put a quarterback in that Superflex spot. So since this format does favor running backs, I wanted to at least shoot for some upside guys like Sony Michel. But I got Kirk Cousins because of the fear of a quarterback run combined with the fact that there was a pretty clear drop in tier in my mind with the alternatives available in that 502 spot. And it kind of backfired. It just so happens that my draft is full of people who don't like quarterbacks. And when that's the case, and when you're one of the people who spend an early round pick at the position, you end up getting a worse deal on that quarterback. The owners in my league who got Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady early probably aren't happy that I was able to snag my QB2, Dak Prescott, in the ninth round. Fortunately, I was able to get a lot of good value, or what I see as good value at least, after that Cousins pick. I got Deion Lewis to go along with my three backs that I drafted in the first four rounds, and I was able to snag Alshon Jeffrey and Jordy Nelson to go along with Davante Adams. And I got George Kittle as my starting tight end, who I think is one of the best later round tight end values this year. So my team actually looks good, at least in my opinion, despite the Cousins pick. I do think it's a good learning, though. If you know how your league mates are going to draft, you've got some advantage in an unpredictable snake draft. You can plan ahead more accurately. Considering I'm drafting with some guys that I've never played against, I had to play it safe. I feel like I had no choice. I think my process was right in getting Cousins, but I didn't like the result because the rest of the league didn't draft quarterbacks in the 5th and 6th round. Only like 3 or 4 of them dropped off the board. But I will say this with the SFB scoring. I'm pretty surprised to see what's happened in other leagues. The quarterback scoring helps the position. I already noted that. But I do think that a lot of people are ignoring the fact that there are additional flex spots in these lineups, which changes the supply and demand equation at running back and wide receiver as well. That's obviously just my opinion based on research, but I think a lot of early round quarterback drafters may suffer a bit, specifically at the running back position, in this format this year. Anyway, like I said, a lot of you have asked about my roster and specifically the Kirk Cousins pick, so there's your answer. And before we get into this week's mailbag questions, I did want to let you know that the British Open is starting on July 19th and FanDuel is bringing something new to the tournament. It's called Quick Pick, and it's the simplest way to play fantasy golf. What makes it so simple, you ask? There's no salary cap. That's right, Quick Pick contests have no salary cap. Instead, the player pool is divided into tiers, from stars all the way to sleepers. Just make your picks from each tier, and you're ready to tee off. It's that simple. And you can try Quick Pick for a shot at $100,000 in prizes during the British Open. Just go to FanDuel.com/campaign-quickpick to learn more. That's FanDuel.com/campaign-quickpick. This first question's an email. It says, "Hi JJ, what are your thoughts on Dak Prescott? Dak was having multiple QB1 weeks at the beginning of last season, but then fell off a cliff in the latter part of the year. Do you think he was exposed and that he is majorly dependent on those around him, or was 2016 an outlier and he is bound for regression to his true mean this season? Jeremy in Texas." So I mentioned in the intro that I got Dak in the Scott Fishbowl, but I wasn't necessarily targeting Dak Prescott. I guess the best way to describe how I feel about Dak is that he's fine. We know he's not going to see a ton of volume through the air, and we know that as a result of that, he's going to be relatively touchdown dependent. Or we could consider him dependent on those touchdowns as well as what he can do on the ground. And that rushing may keep him elevated and relevant throughout the season from a fantasy football perspective. But I have my fears about his true upside given the weapons at his disposal. A huge reason for his lack of success towards the tail end of last year was definitely related to his receivers not getting separation. It wasn't just simply due to the Zeke suspension. There's plenty of data showing that Zeke's replacements were just as effective as Elliott is, and that defenses didn't play Dallas differently as a result of Zeke being sidelined. To put it simply, the Cowboys' offense was just completely uncreative and they lacked playmakers last year. That's the bottom line. And I fear that we're walking into a similar situation this season. So with Dak, I think he can provide a decent floor given his rushing upside, but it's hard for me to see a scenario where he's a top 5 passer in fantasy football. And because that's really what we need for a quarterback to be worthwhile in most single quarterback leagues, I'm not going to be drafting much Dak Prescott this season. This next one says, "Hi JJ, I often hear about how there are targets up for grabs in an offense. For example, this season a lot of experts are high on Doug Baldwin because there are 200 plus targets up for grabs in Seattle with the departure of Jimmy Graham and Paul Richardson. I feel like an argument could be made that the majority of the 200 plus targets will just go to whoever the replacement tight end and wide receiver 2 are, and thus, Doug Baldwin won't see that significant of a bump in opportunities. But I don't have any data to back this up. Is there any data that supports or contradicts the targets are up for grabs argument with players that stick around in an offense? Thanks, PK." I think when people say targets are up for grabs, they mostly mean that players departed a team, and because of that, less established players are stepping in for those guys. So in Seattle's case, you've got Paul Richardson and Jimmy Graham leaving, and now you've got a whole lot of question marks at wide receiver on the outside, and we don't know how they're going to handle the tight end position. Since the talent level is probably going to be worse altogether, then there's no reason to assume that Seattle's tight ends or Seattle's outside Richardson replacement will see the same type of volume as those positions saw last season. If they're not as good, they won't be targeted as much. That's really what people mean when they say that there are targets up for grabs in an offense. This next question is from Twitter from @_therealBernie_. Is Jay Ajayi and Kenyon Drake overdrafted or way overdrafted? I think they're simply overdrafted, and it's only because of the position that they play. when you get to that point in the draft, the running back position starts to get pretty dry, and that's partially why I think we see ADPs that we do for Kenyon Drake and Jay Ajayi. But yes, I agree that they're a little too tough to buy at their cost. With Ajayi, while I think he's the most talented runner on the Eagles, we know there's going to be a rotation of sorts in that Philadelphia offense. And I do fear that Jay Ajayi isn't going to see the super important snaps that he needs to see to be great in fantasy football. Those are passing downs and goal line touches. From when Ajayi joined the Eagles through the playoffs last year, he didn't see a single goal line touch. Corey Clement saw 4 and LeGarrette Blount had 2. And then Clement had the same number of targets as Ajayi had when both players played together last year. And then with Kenyon Drake, he was really, really effective last year, but we don't have this massive sample that Kenyon Drake is a capable back. And that dates back to college. And then there's at least some sort of competition coming from Frank Gore and Kalen Ballage. And look, guys, I don't think that Frank Gore or Kalen Ballage are as good as Kenyon Drake. Ballage wasn't even the lead back at Arizona State, and Frank Gore is 87 years old. But Ballage is a capable pass catcher, and there are already some positive Frank Gore reports out there. But the big thing with Drake on top of this is that Miami is not a very attractive situation for a running back. Like, that team is not very good. If we were talking about the Packers or the Patriots or something, it'd be totally different with Kenyon Drake. But I think believing Kenyon Drake is a little overvalued is a completely logical take. Like, if he breaks out this season, I won't even be upset about it. And it's because he's on a bad team, he's got what appears to be competition, and we've never seen Drake be effective across an entire season. I won't be shocked if he does well this year by any means, and that's not me hedging. But I do think that there are plenty of reasons to be afraid if you're relying on him as a starter in fantasy football. Hopefully you're like me and you've got him in a keeper league so that even if he does bust, you're keeping him for a cheap cost. This next question is from at Adam G. Blevins. I know you're against drafting 2 running backs from the same backfield because of decreasing your upside, but based on their cost and knowing New England backs typically have defined roles, would you draft Burkhead and Michelle together, knowing you'll get the touchdown role in one of them? I don't know if you'll for sure get this touchdown role out of Rex Burkhead or Sony Michelle, but this is a much more understandable approach than going with something like Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman just given the cost of acquiring. And then obviously you're associating those backs with one of the best offenses in football. It's not like you're gobbling up the Miami backfield. So I'm totally fine with this approach if you want to take it. And for the record, I like both Sony Michel and Rex Burkhead this year, specifically Rex Burkhead just given his cost. This next question is from at C. Papnia. Of the two, who would you draft first, Adam Thielen or Stephon Diggs? And with Kirk Cousins at the helm, are either of them second round picks? If not, what round should they go? The Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen thing is really interesting to me. You're going to see a different offense with a different quarterback, so even though Thielen was the more targeted receiver last year, that doesn't mean that he will be this year. Things can change on that end. I think what we really need to figure out throughout camp in the preseason is who's going to be playing in the slot more. That player can end up seeing more and higher quality targets given the corners that he'd be facing. So right now, it's really hard to project whether Thielen or Diggs is the better player to draft. But right now, my projections have Thielen over Diggs because I think Thielen ends up playing more in the slot. And we have seen Kirk Cousins favor that area of the field in the past, though that's partially because Kirk Cousins has never had fantastic high-volume outside receivers. The other thing here, though, is that when you're drafting Thielen and Diggs at their current ADPs, I don't think you're doing so with the intention that they're going to vastly outperform that ADP. Both players should be heavily involved in that offense. You're mostly drafting them for their floor. So when I see people talking about how there's no way that both wide receivers live up to their ADP, I think it's important to remember that part of the reason that you're getting one of those Vikings wideouts is because they're fairly safe bets. And for what it's worth, I think that Diggs is an insanely talented wide receiver who has a higher ceiling in that offense. I wouldn't draft either guy in the second round, but both are strong picks at their current costs. This next one says, "Hey JJ, I am in several leagues, as I am sure you are, all of which have different rules. All of our research, analysis, data, etc. draws us to particular players or groups of players when we draft. Do you find that regardless of rule changes, you still gravitate to the same players in each league, or are you drastically tailoring each draft? I've found with the exception of drastic rule deviations, I end up gravitating to a lot of the same players and was curious if that's an industry-wide trend." Yeah, I mean, you can think of it this way. If there's a small change in scoring, that shouldn't drastically change the way that you feel about a player. Like, Todd Gurley is going to be good in all formats. The Green Bay running back situation is going to look the same in all formats. If you like Marvin Jones because you're not afraid of Kenny Golladay, then no scoring system changes are really going to sway you from that, because in the end, volume drives everything. I will say, though, and I've said this before in the past, but if you're playing in a lot of leagues, it's a good idea to diversify, at least with your early round picks. If you're in 10 leagues, don't get the same guys in each league. Embrace variance and embrace the fact that you're not going to nail every single pick. This last question is from @TomConstantineFF. Comments on LeSean McCoy, however you feel appropriate, and the Bills situation. First off, I think everything is horrible about that LeSean McCoy situation. And I need to be clear that my job isn't to analyze whether or not he did it or how good of a person LeSean McCoy is. I think it's a terrible, disgusting situation, and someone should be appropriately punished for their actions. But as I'll share on Tuesday's podcast, I'm not really into LeSean McCoy this year to begin with. And if he's out, then I want very little to do with the entire Bills offense this year. There's reason to it too, aside from just, the Bills are really bad. But I'll get more into that on Tuesday. That's it for today's show. Thanks again for listening, you guys. If you've yet to subscribe to the Late Round Podcast, make sure you are by searching for it on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, TuneIn, and Stitcher. And when you're on iTunes, make sure you're leaving me a rating and review. It's greatly, greatly appreciated. I'm also on Twitter @LateRoundQB. Thanks, everyone. Enjoy your weekend.